Last Sunday, I told you about my driving adventure back from the Twin Cities on July 1st. Traffic jam around Hinckley, if you've traveled that way, you know that they can be, they can back you up for quite a while. And my 2.5 hour drive from the Twin Cities became a 4.5 hour drive. So here was a little irony along the way. This was one of the songs I heard during my drive. So in case you didn't hear it, the chorus goes, "The waiting is the hardest part." That song has a lot of irony for me this morning. This whole month, in fact, this whole couple of months has been about waiting. This month of July 2016, which is finally here this afternoon, Julie and I leave for a jurisdictional conference and episcopal elections. And when I stand here next week, we will know what the next few months will bring. And the waiting is the hardest part. But there's another kind of waiting that needs our attention this morning. There's the waiting of this man, robbed, beaten, bloodied, bruised by the side of the road, that road from Jerusalem to Jericho. Jesus uses the man in the story as a part of a response to a lawyer, in this case, an expert in Jewish legal tradition, who had asked a question about what's at the heart of the law. You may know that Orthodox Jews have boiled down all of the laws in the Torah to 613 commandments. And this person wants to know, well, what's at the heart of that? He phrases the question as, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus, often really a master at engaging people in conversation, does what sometimes really good teachers do. They say, well, what do you think? And the guy says, well, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. Jesus says, yeah, you got it. You know it. Well, it's kind of a rough translation. But Jesus affirms his answer. But this is a smart person. Love God and love your neighbor, kind of vague, kind of all-encompassing. Well, who is my neighbor? It's a great question. Who's my neighbor? And Jesus then tells this story. Tells this story about a man going from Jerusalem to Jericho who is beaten, who's robbed, beaten, stripped, and waiting. The man waits, perhaps half conscious. He waits for help. Is he aware? Do his hopes arise just a little bit when he sees a figure coming near, if he can see him much at all? He waits. He waits, and a first person passes by. And Jesus says that person was a priest. And the man waits. And another silhouette appears and walks on by. Is he even more than half dead now? Waiting there, does his hope wane? Does he wonder if anyone will stop? And the second person Jesus tells us is a Levite. And then there's a third. A third person comes, and this person stops and bends down and reaches out and helps. And Jesus says, this person is a Samaritan. What does that mean for the story? Why does it matter? And does the guy who gets help really care? Well, one of the things that you may know, and you maybe have heard this before, but it's good to remind ourselves of it again. Samaritans were despised people among the Jews. It's not that they were complete foreigners. They were close enough to the Jews for the Jews to really dislike them. You know, sometimes it's the people who are kind of close to you who you don't like, who you really don't like. That was the Samaritans for the Jews. See, the Jews thought they were kind of an impure people. They shared something of a common history, but the Samaritans then went off and got it wrong. They were practicing a heretical form of Judaism. Now, the other thing that's kind of interesting to know is that in Jesus' time, not unlike our own time, people enjoyed hearing stories that made fun of religious leaders. Stories that tried to kind of make sure they didn't get too high and mighty and punctured their pretensions. And so when Jesus starts telling this story and a priest passes by, the people probably knew what was coming. And then a Levite passes by and, oh, he's going to get those highfalutin, self-important religious leaders. But they would have expected that the hero of the story was just a common, ordinary Jew. Maybe a little like Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof. But Jesus shocks them. It's not a common, ordinary Jew who is the hero. It's a Samaritan. Those despised people. He's the one who takes care of the robbed, bleeding, bruised, hurting man. It is a story about radically inclusive love and care and compassion. What seems to matter most, remember we started with a story about what's at the heart of the law, what's at the heart of what God asks of human beings. And in telling this story, Jesus seems to boil it down to a strong point. What's at the heart of things is love and care and compassion and kindness. It does not matter if you are the most socially respectable person or the most despised person. What matters is love. The welcome statement in our bulletin speaks about our understanding of that kind of radically inclusive love of God. All persons, it says, without regard to race, sexual orientation, economic condition, or religious background, are invited to participate in our ministries and programs and may become members of our congregation. We welcome all in God's love without regard to race, sexual orientation, economic condition, or religious background, because we believe all people can know God. All people can know God's love, and all people in turn can show God's love. All people can have faith in Jesus Christ. What matters most in God's scheme of things is love and care and compassion and kindness. A love, care, compassion, and kindness that responds to the broken, bruised, and bleeding bodies we encounter. And oh goodness, have we seen our share of broken, bleeding, and bruised bodies? Still reeling from the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando, with the bleeding and broken bodies of LGBT persons who are Christians and Muslims and Jews and black and white and Latino, and that night mostly Latino, every color of the human rainbow, shot by a Muslim. Still reeling from that, we hear of terrorist attacks in Turkey and Bangladesh and this week in Saudi Arabia. And there the broken, bruised, and bleeding body are Muslims. And this week the broken and bruised and bleeding bodies were African American men shot and killed by the police. One because he'd been stopped for having a taillight out. And then the broken, bruised, and bleeding bodies were police officers in Dallas. our highways and byways have plenty of broken, bruised, and bleeding bodies. And not all human wounds are physical wounds. There are the broken spirits, the bruised and bleeding hearts that need our attention too. And if we're honest with ourselves, there are days when we are tempted to simply walk on by, to look away. The needs are so great, sometimes just want to forget about it. Earlier this week, I shared a poem at the memorial service for Camille Como, and the poem contained these lines: "Still, what I want in my life is to be willing to be dazzled, to cast aside the weight of facts, and maybe even to float a little above this difficult world." It's a beautiful poem, and I love it. And I want in my life to be dazzled. And I want in my life there to be times when I can float above this difficult world. Nothing wrong with that. The world is difficult and complex and messy. Yet to turn aside permanently is not a condition that we followers of Jesus can engage in. We followers of Jesus can't simply float above the world. We must engage it. Neighbors need our help. Love God. Love your neighbor. Love no matter who you are. Love no matter who needs loving. A little while back, Bob Higgins shared a little book with me called John Wesley, A Study for the Times. The times in which the book was written, the times were the 1890s. The author, Thomas J. Dodd, D.D., about whom I know nothing, wanted to write about Wesley as a person whose faith could speak to the faith of the 1890s. He thought his life and character could be instructive. Dodd describes Wesley as, quote, "like some broad, liberal man of the world, loving God with his fellow men, holding his own opinions, and doing in his own way what he could to advance the cause of good morals and religion." Now, it's a very 1890s way of speaking, not very inclusive in terms of gender pronouns. Some of the language is a little old, but you get the impression of the kind of Wesley that the author thought was Wesley. And then he tells a story wanting to illustrate what he saw as Wesley's broad-mindedness. He tells the story of Wesley's assessment of a Unitarian. And you have to know that in the Church of England of Wesley's time, Unitarians were a little bit like Samaritans. Now, they might not have been despised, but they were considered to have missed the boat religiously. They were off the track. They'd lost their way. They were outside the bonds of true faith. And Wesley would write about a Unitarian named William Edmondson. And of William Edmondson, Wesley wrote this: "What faith, love, gentleness, long-suffering could mistake send such a man as this to hell? I scruple not to say, let my soul be with the soul of William Edmondson." Wesley was trying to say, look, we may not agree, but what I see here is love and faith and gentleness, and that's finally what matters. Love of God and love of neighbor. In seminary, I read a classic book called The Purpose of the Church and Its Ministry. I know, just an engaging sounding title, the kind of book that you would only read because it gets assigned in seminary. The author was a guy named H. Richard Niebuhr. If you were here last Sunday, you may remember that I mentioned a Niebuhr. Last Sunday, I referred to Reinhold Niebuhr. He's H. Richard Niebuhr's brother. These two brothers were very prominent theologians in the middle of the 20th century, but people get them mistaken all the time. Sometimes you'll go and Google the names and they get it all messed up. But H. Richard Niebuhr, that's just trivia, doesn't matter all that much. It mattered to Reinhold and H. Richard and to their wives, but not to many other people. Anyway, H. Richard Niebuhr in this book, The Purpose of the Church and Its Ministry, tried to write about what's at the heart of being the church. What's the very heart of what's the very purpose of the church? And he wrote this famous line: "The purpose of the church is the increase among persons of love in God, love of God, and love of neighbor." It's what's at the heart of things. Love of God and love of neighbor. And the church exists to help increase that. And then he penned this sentence, which I really love. God's love of self and neighbor, neighbor's love of God and self, self's love of God and neighbor, or God's love of self and neighbor, neighbor's love of God and self, self's love of God and neighbor, are so closely interrelated that none of the relations exist without the other. It's all tied up together. Love God, love neighbor, love self. And the church exists to help make that happen. It's part of my stored memory bank. I remember that. When I think about all of the things that we do and all that we're about, and sometimes all of the tasks that need doing and paperwork and all of that stuff, what's at the heart of it all is love of God and love of neighbor and increasing that in our hearts and our lives together. And in my memory bank is also this very short poem by Wendell Berry that I hold close in my heart. Whatever happens, those who have learned to love one another have made their way into the lasting world and will not leave. Whatever happens. Sometimes love seems like just such a weak thing. People are shot and killed, and we say love. And it seems so powerless. It seems so easy to say the words and then go on, and they're still broken and bruised and bleeding bodies. How can we talk about love when black men are shot and killed because they had a broken taillight? How can we talk about love in the name of religion when people use religion to deny the humanity of others or to blow other people up? How can we talk about love when police officers are gunned down by snipers in a city in which I lived for 7 years? Yet the message of Jesus is clear. Love. Love without conditions. Love without boundaries. Love without definitions of who's in and who's out. Love no matter who you are. Love no matter who needs loving. The purpose of the church is to increase love of God and love of neighbor. And it is not an easy call to answer, this call of love, because it means we can't simply just float above the difficult facts of the world. Sometimes, but not permanently, we have to look at the broken, bruised, and bleeding bodies. We have to feel the ache in our backs and in our arms as we bend down to pick them up, as we bend down to do the work of God. We cannot be so dazzled forever that we don't see hurt and pain and don't respond with courage and kindness. Now, there is time for being dazzled and appreciating the beauty and brilliance of the world. But the most beautiful thing of all in the world is love. Whatever happens, those who have learned to love one another have made their way into the lasting world and will not leave. Whatever happens. Whatever happens, love. And those words are deeply poignant for me today. In this next few days, I don't know what's going to happen with my life. It's a scary and vulnerable place to be. We've done good work here in loving and caring and kindness and compassion without limits, without boundaries. We've not done it perfectly. We're not perfect. There are places to learn and grow. I'm not perfect. And occasionally I get very stark reminders of places where I've not been. But I am proud of what we have done and continue to do here. We have sought to be a church that helps people grow in love of God and neighbor. And I am proud of that. And I would be proud to continue that work with you and know that that work needs to continue, because this world needs people committed to love of God and love of neighbor, to compassion, to justice, to reconciliation, to peace. A broken, bleeding, and bruised world needs that. It needs us. It needs us to be that kind of community, that kind of people. Whatever happens, love. Without limits, without conditions, without boundaries, whatever happens, love. In the name and spirit of Jesus, whatever happens, love. Amen.